remember who said this, but I'm sure it was either St. Thomas Aquinas or St. Augustine, and I think it was St. Thomas Aquinas, that said God reveals himself in the mode of the receiver. St. Thomas Aquinas? God reveals... Does anybody... Sister, do you know the Latin phrase? Can you remember it? But the gist of that phrase is that God reveals himself in the mode of the receiver. Now think of that. You don't have to move from here to God. God wants to reveal himself to you just where you are and just the way you are. God will reveal himself to each one of us where we are. We don't have to change to get God's revelation. That's really, I love that statement. God reveals himself in your mode. Just, we are unique people, and so therefore, think of this, that there is a unique revelation of God to each one of us. And one of the things that I think is so dangerous that we've gotten into in education, especially in this country and maybe in others, I don't know, is education to me seems that it should be something that got a person to think. But we are indoctrinating people. We are trying to form everybody into a mold in education today. I really see this. It's not a matter of education being something that gets people to think anymore. It's we want them all to think alike. And if we are unique creatures, that is an impossibility. So, as I talk to you about, as I look back in my life and see why I stand here today, I'm going to tell you that the God that I bless and praise with my life chose to reveal himself to me. And I'll talk to you about things that happened in my life that I don't know why they happened, but they came to be so important to me later. So I was born right here in the state of Florida. My mother was born in Florida. My father was born in Virginia and came down here, and his family had come from Scotland and came to Florida because of the Depression, and he was hungry and met this farmer family that my mother was one of the children in that family, and they eventually got married. And I was born in a little house about that big out in the country. I wasn't born in the hospital. I was born in that little house, and the next day the doctor came and visited us. That seems kind of archaic today. I'm not that old. I'm not 50 yet. I won't be able to say that next year, though. But just, 49 years ago, there was no electric lights in the house. I lived in a rural area. There wasn't any electric lights in rural Florida 49 years ago. I saw those things come into the communities through the great TVA, the Roosevelt starting, making the statement that we're going to have electricity in all the homes in America. And I remember when my grandparents got electricity. I was raised down in the central part of Florida, and never knew a Catholic. I know where the Catholic Church was now. The closest Catholic Church to where I live was 50 miles away in Lakeland, Florida. I wasn't raised with any kind of prejudice. It's something that I look back on my life, and I'm really thankful to my parents, because I was raised where there was a lot of that. I was raised in a Florida that had water fountains that said white only and colored. I drank from those water fountains all my life as a youth, where a black person would not dare drink from the same water fountain that a white person drank from. Wouldn't dare walk into a restaurant. Wouldn't dare. You walked into a doctor's office through the back door if you were black. You didn't walk in and sit down in the waiting room. Now, those things didn't mean a lot to me then, or I never thought about them really until recently in my life. And they didn't have a great deal of effect on me because I wasn't around that. And I never heard it in my house, but as I look back, it was a fact of life. You know, and the black people in the community knew their place. I think that's a proper way that it would have been said. And I can remember when I first moved up to Tallahassee, or when I first traveled up here. It might have been before I moved, because I worked with an equipment distributor, and I managed a territory at that time. And so I came up here 20 years ago to call on tractor dealers. I sold tractors and farm equipment. And I can remember in Marianna, Florida. Now, I'm married now, and I'm married to a Catholic girl. Seemed like all the other girls I knew, I couldn't tell the difference, you know. And I can remember in Marianna, Florida, walking into a big tractor dealership, and I got to talking with a farmer. We were solving the world's problems. You know, we've all, I know you ladies do that too, don't you? Sit around and just, well, that's, we were solving the world's problems. And this guy said to me, "Mister, if we could just get rid of all them niggers and Catholics, we'd be all right." Good God. That was in the last 20 years. And that was his solution. You know. Now, Steve, do you believe that story? These guys live just a few miles west of there, folks, and they know that's... And, you know, that guy would have stood up on the counter and said that, and everybody in the place would have said, "Amen." But it shocked me. It really did. You know, I'm raised in the same part of the world, but it really shocked me, because I never did hear any talk like that in my house. Never, ever, ever. And I thank God for that. I thank God for my parents. I just never heard that. I mean, some of the best friends that I had as I grew up were black children. And I just would never talk that they were any different. So I didn't think that Catholics were either. You know, I didn't know that if we got rid of the blacks and the Catholics, there'd be no problems in the world. But I really never thought a lot about that issue. But I went off to college, and in the middle of college, I had a period of life that I wasn't really happy about things, and I joined the service. Went to the Marine Corps. And, you know, macho man, I went and joined the Marine Corps. And the first thing in my life that, as I look back, was really something supernatural and I didn't understand for a long time, was while I was in the Marine Corps, I can remember something happened to me that was indelibly imprinted in my mind. One night I walked out behind my barracks. Now, I'm not married now. I've kind of taken you back. I'm not a married man. I'm a single person. And I laid down on the ground, and I looked up in the heavens, and I said these words, and I'll never forget them. Lord, if you have something for me to do, would you please show me? And folks, I was as far from God as a human being can be. I did not go to church. I didn't think of going to church. The only thing I thought of is when it's payday and I'm going to go to town and raise some hell. That's just exactly the way I thought. I'm going to get my paycheck and I'm going to hit town and I'm going to see if I can find me a good-looking woman and I'm just going to get drunker than a skunk and have a good time. So this old boy wasn't searching for God at all. So it was really shocking to me to find myself laying on the ground and crazy words like that coming out of me. Crazy words. That was in 1962. And I can remember, I could never forget I'd done that. I couldn't forget it. It wasn't something that was on my mind every day, but I would find myself in a situation where there'd be a group of people there, and I would say, you know, maybe there'd be a pastor there or a priest, and I'd say, does God ever tell you to wait? Because that was, when I cried that out, I got an answer. Something in me says, David, I've got something I want you to do, but you got to wait. Now, I had no idea. I didn't know what to think about that. I thought maybe this is just you're crazy. You're a messed up buddy. But I never forgot that. And I would ask people, does God tell you to wait? And you know, most of them would tell me no. Most of them would say, no, bless God. If God's got something for you to do, boy, you better go do it. I didn't know what to do. And years later, when I finally picked up my Bible and I read it, and I see Moses waited 40 blooming years. But I did. That was indelibly imprinted in my heart. That I didn't know what to do about it, and I didn't think about it a lot, but it was there. I never sat around and said, wonder what I'm supposed to go do. I didn't do that, but it was indelibly imprinted in me. And the next thing I remember happening is after I'm married. Now here I marry this beautiful red-headed Catholic girl. If any of you seen her, she's got the prettiest red hair you've ever seen. And, you know, went through, I don't know. I wasn't Catholic, you know, so I signed all those papers saying I'd raise my kid Catholic. Didn't mean a thing to me. Man, I was wanting to get that woman. Sign a paper. Man, I'd have signed a paper. I'd have done anything. Yeah, give it. Here, here, Father. I don't need to read it. Well, I didn't. I don't know what the devil it said. Didn't care what it said. Sign the paper, you know. And I can remember my wife saying, well, you know, we got to have this kind of service because that didn't mean nothing either. Fine with me. I don't care what kind of service we have. After we were married about, I'm going to guess about 8 years. Somewhere's 6 to 8 years maybe. We had some children, and well, by this time we probably had 3 children. And I thought it was time for some of our children to get interested in piano lessons. So I began to look around for a piano. And I was pretty good at, I always like to have the best. And I was pretty good at getting the best for less. So what I started doing was looking for, I'm going to find me a good piano that's used. And I did. One day I picked up the paper, and it said, handmade upright Steinway grand. I said, that's what I want. So I went to the place where this piano was and ring the doorbell, and I walk in, and somebody else is looking at the piano. And when they finished, the husband and the wife were there. Now I'm having to take this all in my head, folks. I haven't thought of this in years. The husband and the wife were there, but it was obviously it was the wife's job to sell this piano. And so we walk over toward the piano, and she turns around and looks at me. She says, "You didn't come here to buy a piano." I said, "I didn't. That's why I thought I was here." She said, "Would you be embarrassed to pray with me?"
Wow.
God, can you imagine, folks? I walk in a lady's house to buy a blooming piano. And this lady says, "Would you?" And folks, this old boy has not been praying to nobody. She said, "Would you be embarrassed to pray with me?" And that lady got down on her knees at the coffee table. Well, what else could I do but say no? What do you say in that situation, brother? I want the piano. Brother, I didn't get the piano either. I mean, when this lady was through with me, folks, her mind wasn't on money either. But anyway, me and that lady and her husband knelt down at the coffee table. And I'm saying, "Oh, God, what's going to happen now?" Now, this lady was a Jew that had become Christian. And she prayed. And she got through praying, and I'm just sitting there. She's praying. Nothing. I don't know what she said. She prayed. And she got through, and I looked at her, and she looked, can you imagine how I must have felt? And she looked puzzled. And she said to me, she says, "I knew God had something really powerful for me to say to you. But," he says, "the only thing I got to say after we prayed was you're going to have a lot of money." And I said to her, "Would you pray to God that it would not keep me from Him?" I don't know why I said that either, folks. That's all that lady said to me. She says, "I really had something I was going to tell you, but God tells me you're going to have a lot of money." And probably, and in the next few years, I had a lot of money. I said to the lady, I'll never forget it. I don't even remember her name. It's not important. I walked out of that house, and I said, "I'm coming back to see you because I had met somebody that was different. I just knew there's something different about this woman." And I said to her, "I'm going to come back and see you." And she said to me, "You'll never see me again." I walked out, and I said, "Well, I'll show you." I knew as we talked that they were moving. Her husband was a professor there at the university, and they were moving to Blacksburg, Virginia. Moving to what's the university there? Virginia Tech.
Virginia Tech.
Moving to Virginia Tech to teach. So I just wasn't a very few days that I'm back through that area, and I said, "Well, I'm going to show her. I'm going to stop in and visit her." And I pulled in, they were gone. They had moved. Already moved. I could tell you some more things about these people, because as I sat there and talked to them, she had a daughter that had horrible cancer. That was the reason they're selling the piano. She's the one that played it. But anyway, that was one of those things in my life that's been indelibly imprinted in me. That lady, and I've never seen her again, and, don't know if I will again. It'll probably be in heaven. But I remembered those words, and I remembered what I said. Just like I remember that night laying on the ground, I remember what I said. Now, I think this is probably a good place to... How many of you know, you remember what year I said it was when I was laying on that ground? 1962. Can anybody tell me something else momentous that happened in 1962? That sweetheart was born. But I heard somebody else give the very answer. Vatican Council II was convened. Now, I'm telling you, folks, I don't even know a Catholic. Now, not too long after that, I had a friend. You know, my life's going on as usual. Nothing wrong in it, folks, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, you're looking at somebody that when I look back at the conversion that I've been in, I get puzzled many times because most of the people I know, they reached rock bottom places and all kind of hard places, and they said, "Oh, God, help me." I never did that. I never did that. And I can remember asking God, "Why has this happened to me this way?" And the only answer I've ever received is because this is the way most people are in the nation you live in. They putter along and everything goes fine. And I had a friend one day walk up to me and say, "Would I go on a Crucio weekend?" You ever heard of a Crucio? Well, I had a... And I wasn't Catholic, folks. Now, I have been president of the school board, parish council. I formed one of the first parish councils formed in this diocese in Quincy, Florida, and I was not a Catholic. But I went to the Catholic church. I worked in it like I worked in the world. You know, buddy, I did everything I could to make the school run right. And I was involved with our school in Tallahassee when it became an intra-parochial school. Therefore, all the authority didn't lie within a church. It lay within the parish count. I mean, within the school board. And I was the heavyweight in the school board. I mean, I could tell things to go on and the bishop couldn't stop it. My bishop, Bishop Rene Gracita, Charlie and I sat down to do a 45-minute TV program with Bishop Rene Gracita in Corpus Christi, Texas. And Bishop Gracita said to me, and it was the first time he ever said it, "You are the biggest thorn I've ever had in my side." Because he'd come into town, tell him to do one thing, and I'd tell him to do something else, and he'd do what I said. Well, I was there. But that same bishop said, "But buddy, I knew when you began to go through your conversion." So I was active in the Catholic Church, but I wasn't a Catholic. You know, I just went. I went because my wife went, my children went, and I placed great value in us being a family. I went to church. I've had people tell me, "David, you're the best Catholic I know and you don't belong to the church." I did. I've had that said by many, many Catholics. Folks, I was a reader. Called on all the time to read. The bishop came to town. You know who they called to get up and read? Me. I didn't even belong to the church. Oh, and I stand here today as somebody that's thankful for that tolerance. I mean it. I'm thankful for that. I can stand here today and say that I never, ever have been mistreated by the Roman Catholic Church. Now, I know a lot of Catholics can't say that, and they're right. I know people that get mistreated. I've never been mistreated. I'm so thankful to that because probably there's places in my life all you had to do is give me a little excuse and my whole family would have stopped going to church. I'd have just Man, I had the power. But I just had a lot of good people in my life. They were kind to me and put up with me. The bishop put up with me. You know, listen, we rewrote the bylaws in our church so I could do those things. We did. Bishop come over and says, "What's this guy doing this?" And we'd say, "Well, don't say he's got to be Catholic." Well, oh God. So anyway, I went on a Crucio. Innocent enough, isn't it? Little old, you know, I said, I'll never forget, my friend put it to me like this. He said, "You could give 3 days of your life to Jesus, couldn't you?" I thought, well, that sounds reasonable. You know, that's not very much, 3 days. So I went. My Lord, what a 3 days. And if you ask me what happened to me those 3 days, the only thing I would say is I stopped 3 days in my life. I just stopped. You know, I talked this morning about how we'll deceive ourselves and we'll stay so busy we don't have time for nothing else. I stopped. And I really thought for 3 days. If you asked me a specific thing that happened, I'd say, no, I don't know a specific thing. I didn't hear any talk that rang my bell. All the letters, they were wonderful and they made me feel mighty good, but I don't know. But I remember walking out of there and this old boy had made a commitment in my heart. I said, "Lord Jesus, I'll do anything you show me." And I didn't know he could show me one thing, folks. I didn't. I had no idea that God could show me anything, but I made that commitment. And I can remember right after that, one of the times when God began to get me to be honest with myself. Now you remember, God reveals himself in the mode of the receiver. See, I've got something indelibly imprinted in me because Jesus has revealed something to me. Not a man. Not somebody talking to me. This is something that happened in my heart. I can remember right after that, I was riding to Lake City, Florida. Now, you know, here's this crazy commitment. I'll do anything you show me. And I'm 40 miles out of Tallahassee on I-10 just to get it. And something in me said, "Go back." I said, and I can remember doing it out loud, folks. I said, "Lord, that's the craziest thing I ever heard." Every time I heard some little voice like that in me, if I turn around and did what it said, I'd never get anything done. And here was what just blew my mind away. That same voice said, "Well, you don't have to go back. I'm going to love you just the same." But folks, before any time a little voice had spoken to me, it would have condemned me. It would have said, "Well, if you don't go back, you got it. You've had it, brother." But this voice didn't say that. It says, "You don't have to go back. I'm going to love you the same no matter what you do." But I remembered my commitment. And folks, that just rang my bell. I thought, "Oh, God." And I said out loud, now you can think I'm some kind of nut riding down the road if you want, but I said, "Lord, I'm a doubting Thomas. You got to show me." And it was just like a big light went on in me, and something said, "Thank goodness, now that you know what you are, it can be healed." And I began to understand for the first time in my life, it was as I would identify what separated me from God, God would heal it. I didn't have to do anything, folks, except be willing to search it out and want it to be healed. Admit it. Admit. I thought I was telling God something. I'm a doubting Thomas. Can you imagine that? I think I'm going to tell God something about me. He knew what I was. I began to admit what I was. And so here was my thought pattern. I said, okay, I'll go back, but you got to show me. So I went to looking for an exit, and I can see the exit right now. I pulled off up onto this road, went over the overpass, pulled back down on the road, and as I did, there was a hitchhiker standing there. Now, folks, I probably hadn't picked up a hitchhiker in, 15 years. Right after you're out of the service, you pick up a lot of hitchhikers because you're doing a lot of it.